the Philippines' unemployment rate eases in October. Philippine inflation slows to 4.2% in November. A new study suggests the COVID-19 Omicron variant isn't deadlier than the other mutations of the disease. And for this week's In Focus, we'll discuss the presidential bid of Vice President Lenny Robredo with her spokesperson, Attorney Barry Gutierrez. Hi, I'm Carmina Constantino. Dateline Philippines begins right now. Thanks for joining us. For those of you watching us on YouTube and on Facebook, nice to have you with us today. We begin with the Philippines' latest jobs report. The country's unemployment rate fell to 7.4% in October from 8.9% in September. That's equivalent to 3.5 million jobless Filipinos for the month. A big portion of the job losses were in the education as well as the financial and insurance sectors. The agriculture and retail industries, meanwhile, contributed the most jobs as the lowering of the alert level in the National Capital Region allowed more establishments to reopen. The Philippines' economic managers expect better numbers in the November labor survey due to the further easing of COVID restrictions. They say sustaining these gains will allow the local economy to rebound to pre-pandemic levels in early 2022. Philippine inflation eases for the third straight month thanks to lower food prices. Inflation hit 4.2% in November, a four-month low. According to the Philippine Statistics Authority, the heavily weighted food and non-alcoholic beverages index slid to 3.9% during the month from 5.3% in October. That's mainly due to a drop in vegetable prices and lower increments in meat and fish prices. November's figure brings average inflation to 4.5%, which is still above government's full-year target range of 2 to 4%. The latest inflation print also went above the Philippine Central Bank's forecast range of 3.3 to 4.1% for November. But the BSP still sees average inflation falling within the government's target next year and in 2023 as supply-side pressures moderate. At least one economist agrees with the central bank's assessment.
The main drivers of inflation are food and fuel prices. And we've seen, I believe that we've seen the peak in crude oil prices. They're about 20% lower than their peak. With regard to food prices, my own studies has shown that it's really transitory. I do expect that even food prices will, you know, ease a bit. And my projection for next year really is around 3.5% inflation rate. By the first quarter of the year, you will see a inflation headline inflation rate actually averaging below 3%.
The BSP adds demand-side inflationary pressures may be dampened by potential delays in the lifting of domestic lockdown measures and the emergence of the Omicron COVID variant. Hunger among Filipino families fell in September. According to a social weather station survey, the hunger rate fell to 10% from 13.6% in June. That translates to a drop from 3.4 million families going hungry in June to just 2.5 million in September. The survey was conducted among 1,200 adults last September 12 to 16. The survey also noted hunger declined in all areas except in Metro Manila, which recorded a 14% hunger incidence. Worries over the Omicron variant somehow ease. That's as a study by South African doctors and experts suggests the variant may be causing mainly mild infections. The South African Medical Research Council said majority of patients in the COVID ward of a local hospital only showed mild symptoms and were not oxygen dependent. But it adds more research is needed. Preliminary findings by another study also showed survivors of COVID-19 may be at higher risk for reinfection with the Omicron variant than an average person's risk for a first infection. In the U.S., at least 17 COVID-19 cases, including a possible, make that a probable case of the Omicron variant, detected in a cruise ship whose passengers disembarked in New Orleans over the weekend. The suspected Omicron case is a South African crew member of the Norwegian Cruise Line. Louisiana health officials said all passengers were tested for COVID-19 before leaving the ship. Still in the U.S., New York City expanding its vaccine mandate to include all private sector employees and children over 5 years old. Details in this report.
And we have to move quickly. That's why I describe the actions we're taking today as a preemptive strike. Get ahead of this problem before it deepens and use the thing that works, vaccination.
As the holidays and colder weather collide with the highly transmissible Omicron variant, New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio is doubling down on the fight against COVID-19. The mayor announcing Monday that starting December 27th, all private sector employers must ensure their workers have been fully vaccinated. The mandate, de Blasio said, is the first of its kind in the nation.
It is time. Look, this is how we put health and safety first. By ensuring that there is a vaccine mandate that reaches everyone universally in the private sector.
In addition, children 5 to 11 years old must get at least one vaccine dose by December 14th to enter restaurants and to participate in extracurricular school activities such as sports, band, orchestra, and dance.
Only one dose required. There's time for parents to get that done.
Patrons over the age of 12 must also be fully vaccinated in order to enter businesses after December 27th. The requirements come at a time when new coronavirus infections are accelerating nationwide, especially in northern states, and as the highly transmissible Omicron variant has spread to at least one-third of U.S. states.
Latest genome sequencing results here in the Philippines show the Omicron variant has yet to reach the country. But there are still 8 travelers from South Africa who are unaccounted for. The health department also waiting for the sequencing results of a COVID-positive South African traveler and some returning overseas Filipinos.
Hopefully by Wednesday morning, makuha natin agad ang mga resulta nito. Kasama nito yung sa South African na nagpositibo. As to the contacts na sinasabi nung sa South African na i-report natin na naka-quarantine, lahat po ay na may mild or either asymptomatic o di kaya ay may mild na kaso yung nagpositibo.
President Rodrigo Duterte also confident the country can cope with the possible entry of the newest COVID variant.
We are not hoping for the best, but we pray to God that it will not come to our shores. But if ever, if the good thing, we can cope up with it just as we did with COVID-19.
Health Secretary Francisco Duque III assuring Filipinos government is preparing for the possible entry of the Omicron variant. Duque admits it's only a matter of time before the variant gets into the country.
Meron tayong corridor strategy na ginagamit, yung point of origin, meron tayong mga red listed countries, ay may travel ban tayo except for the Filipinos, mga OFWs, of course, yung health system's capacity ng hospital natin, pinalawin natin ang kanilang kapasidad, yung bed utilization, at yung ating ICU, mechanical ventilators, ay sinisiguro natin na kakayanin tumugon in case magkaroon ng worst case scenario or sustained high community transmission.
Duque, meanwhile, sees no more easing of health measures in the coming weeks. He says it's more likely that most of the country will remain under their current alert level during the holidays.
Para sa atin, dapat siguro tama lang manatili muna tayo sa alert level 2. Bakit kamo? Unang-una ay ang mobility, tataas na naman ngayong kapaskuhan. Alam natin yan, no? At meron nagmamadyang o bata ng Omicron.
The Philippines logged 543 new COVID infections Monday. It's the 8th straight day that the number of cases has remained below 700. 113 deaths were also reported. Active cases stand at 13,548, the lowest since May 31st of last year.
At this point, the health department says the country is now at a minimal risk for COVID-19. The national health system capacity also at low risk.
All regions show decrease in average daily attack rates compared to the previous 3 to 4 weeks and remain to be at minimal to low risk case classification with a negative 1 or 2 week growth rates. All regions have a total COVID-19 bed and ICU utilization at low risk or less than 50%. The National Capital Region is currently at low risk case classification.
In other news, Senator Richard Gordon slams a number of Philippine government agencies for failing to act on the Pharmaly controversy. Gordon heads the Senate Blue Ribbon Committee, which is looking into government's pandemic supply spending. Back in September, he directed the Anti-Money Laundering Council to review the bank transactions of Pharmaly Pharmaceuticals, which secured billions worth of government contracts despite having a small capitalization. But so far, the AMLAC has yet to produce any findings.
Sabi ng data privacy rights should not be cited as an excuse to evade legal proceedings. O ano ginagawa nga ng AMLA? If the executive says he smells corruption, dapat o AMLA, gawin yan. AMLA, the chairman of AMLA is a fellow alumnus of San Beda. Mm-hmm. Ano? Ano ginagawa ng DOJ? Kaibigan ko yung Secretary Menado Guevara. I think he's a very upright person. Eh, siyempre, nasa cabinet siya. Tabi lahat ang gumagalaw.
A lawyer releases a copy of the graft complaint filed against Energy Secretary Alfonso Cusi and Davao businessman Dennis Uy over the controversial Malampaya deal. Rico Domingo, the lawyer of the complainants, showed the copy dated October 18th. This means the complaint against Cusi and Uy were filed prior to the publication of media reports refuting claims of Cusi and Uy's lawyer that there was no complaint at the time the reports were published. Cusi and Uy filed cyber libel cases against several news organizations, including ABS-CBN, the parent firm of this news channel, over what they call malicious reporting on the Malampaya deals.
Kung ang kanilang nire-report lamang ay tunay na sinabi sa criminal complaint at wala ng iba, they're not editorializing, and it is a pure reportorial of what had been alleged and averred in the criminal complaint, then walang problema ang journalist. Under the law, dapat may prior approval ng DOE at dapat may due diligence on the financial, legal, and the technical qualifications of the transferee or the assignee. They did not do that.
The Court of Tax Appeals allows Rappler CEO Maria Ressa to travel to Norway to personally receive her Nobel Peace Prize. Our very own Mike Navallo now joins us for more on this. Mike, over to you.
Hi, Carmina. Another court has actually granted Maria Ressa's bid to travel to Oslo to receive her Nobel Peace Prize, and that's the Court of Tax Appeals. In a four-page resolution issued Monday, December 6, the CTA First Division granted Ressa's urgent motion to travel outside the country, which she filed through her counsel from Accra Law on November 12. This comes a few days after the Court of Appeals also allowed Ressa's travel plea. The CA is hearing her appeal to her cyber libel conviction, while the CTA is hearing the tax evasion cases filed against her and Rappler Holdings Corporation over the sale of Philippine Depository Receipts, or PDRs. Unlike in the CA case where the Office of the Solicitor General opposed Ressa's travel motion, supposedly because receiving the award is not necessary nor urgent and that Ressa is a flight risk, neither the Department of Justice nor the Bureau of Internal Revenue opposed the motion. The court followed an earlier ruling where it said that if no objection or comment is received within 3 working days, it will grant Ressa's subsequent motion to travel. A fourth justice, actually 3 justices, voted to grant Ressa's travel motion, while a fourth justice inhibited. Among the conditions imposed by the CTA, the travel shall only be to Oslo, Norway from December 8 to 13. She is required to inform the court via email within 3 days from arrival in Manila about her return with a photocopy or scanned copy of her passport with a stamp of arrival from the Bureau of Immigration, and to conform to travel guidelines and restrictions imposed by the Interagency Task Force. Rappler also says a similar motion to travel has been granted by a passing court hearing another tax evasion case. Now, with the approvals from 3 different courts, Ressa is now cleared to receive her award in Oslo on December 10. She is the first Filipino Nobel laureate and the first journalist since the 1930s to receive the prestigious award. Carmina?
Thanks a lot, Mike Navaglio there, joining us live. Appreciate it, Mike. Take care. Keep safe. Moving on, President Duterte urged to sign the draft of a national position that would allow the use of nuclear power in the country's energy mix. The director of the Department of Science and Technology, Philippine Nuclear Research Institute, asserts it could potentially bring down the inevitable rising cost of electricity significantly. The official adds the use of nuclear energy is clean, resilient to extreme weather, and safe. For more on this story, head on over to news.abs-cbn.com. And take a quick break now. Up ahead, In Focus turns the spotlight on the presidential bid of Vice President Lenny Robredo as we speak with her spokesperson, Attorney Barry Gutierrez. Stay with us here on Dateline Philippines. You're on ANC. We're back. You're still with Dateline Philippines here on ANC. Here's another look at our headlines this noon. The Philippines' unemployment rate eases in October. Philippine inflation slows to 4.2% in November. And a new study suggests the COVID-19 Omicron variant isn't deadlier than the other mutations of the disease. A ninth petition against the presidential bid of the late dictator's son, Ferdinand Marcos Jr., set to be filed before the Commission on Elections. Our very own Ina Firmina now joins us to tell us more about that. Ina, go ahead.
Yes, KC, the group, which calls itself Pudno Nga Ilocano, which translates to genuine Ilocano, is already here at the Commission on Elections main office in Intramuros, Manila, to file this ninth case against Marcos, setting to bar his presidential bid in May 2022. This is the fourth disqualification case or disqualification petition against the presidential aspirant KC. The rest, of course, offer cancellation of the certificate of candidacy. And there's also one petition that seeks to declare him as a nuisance candidate. Now, this group is saying there is no such thing as a solid North, and they are here to make that known to the rest of the country as they're set to file their petition anytime now before the COMELEC. They're just finalizing their e-filing for their petition to be formally received by the COMELEC Law Department. Now, their petition is hinged on Marcos's tax case conviction. So once again, this is a case that is anchored on the conviction of Marcos on his non-filing of income tax returns in 1995. Of course, we know that that ruling by the Quezon City RTC has been modified by the Court of Appeals that acquitted him of the non-payment of income taxes covering 1982 up to 1985, but affirmed that part of the ruling of the QCRTC on non-filing of ITR. So they are saying that because of that violation of the tax code, the non-filing of ITRs, as affirmed by the Court of Appeals, Marcos is then perpetually disqualified to run for any public office. And not only that, but also lost his right to participate in an election, his right to vote, or his right of suffrage. They're saying aside from the perpetual disqualification then of Marcos KC, he also does not possess one of the qualifications to run for president, which is you must be a qualified voter. Essentially, they're saying because the accessory penalty of one not being able to vote when he is in violation and convicted by a trial court in violation of any provision of the tax code, then Marcos is no longer a qualified voter. The group also has martial law survivors as some of the petitioners, and most of them are Ilocanos. They're here to say that taxes are the lifeblood of a country, and one cannot run for the top post if he does not honor that particular law, which states that we must pay our income taxes. The group, KC, has former COMELEC chairman and constitutionalist attorney Christian Monsod as their lead counsel. Attorney Monsod did not accompany them today but they're here now with their placards calling Marcos a tax evader and calling him a liar, in fact, for saying that he is not perpetually disqualified from public office, when in fact he is not qualified to run for any public office in any election. That is the latest that we have. Again, this is the 9th petition against Marcos's presidential bid and the 4th disqualification case against Bongbong Marcos. That is the latest election update from the COMELEC. Ina Reformina, ABS-CBN News.
Ina, as you correctly pointed out, it's a 9th petition, but remind us once again, when is the COMELEC expected to print those ballots?
The printing of the ballots, KC, will start on January 13. That is for the overseas voters. For the regular in-country elections, the printing will start on January 15. And the COMELEC has set a December 15 deadline to come up with the list of official candidates for the upcoming national and local positions, which means that ideally all cases or all challenges to the candidacy of any local or national candidate should be finally ruled by the COMELEC before December 15. That is ideally, but that may not be the case. And so there is a rule now from the commission that for as long as your case has not attained finality, then your name may still be on the ballot. And if by on election day, when the vote shall have been canvassed, you may still be proclaimed if you went to the Supreme Court and your case has not again attained finality as far as any disqualification or COC cancellation or nuanced candidate case petitions are concerned, Casey.
All right. Thanks a lot for laying that out for us. Ina Reformina there joining us on the line. Take care, Ina. Keep safe. Well, Vice President Lenny Robredo takes a swipe at Manila Mayor Esco Moreno's move to support the Senate bid of President Duterte. Robredo says while she respects Moreno's decision, it says something about his goals and principles.
Karapatan niya naman yan. Karapatan naman piliin kung sino yung gusto mong makasama. Pero yung choices naman, not just for this bid. Pero yung choices naman natin lahat, laging reflection siya ng aspirations natin. Lagi siyang reflection ng values na pinapaniwalaan natin.
Robredo adds she is proud of her senatorial lineup, which includes people she has worked with in many of her advocacies. Well, one would think that being the second highest official of the land would make you a shoo-in for the presidency, but that's not the case for Vice President Lenny Robredo. Fact is, she is in the middle of her toughest political battle yet. It's been an uphill climb for Team Robredo. How do they intend to pave the path straight to the palace? Joining us today, Attorney Barry Gutierrez, spokesperson for Vice President Lenny Robredo. Welcome to the program, Attorney Barry. Thanks for joining us today. Nice to see you again. Attorney Gutierrez, can you hear me? Attorney Gutierrez?
I can hear you. You can't hear me?
No, we can't. Very, very vaguely, very, very faint. But we're going to try and move on with the discussion. If, you know, for some reason the audio doesn't keep up with our discussion, we're going to try and get you back again. In fact, this is what we're going to do. We're going to go to a gap, fix the connection, and get back to you right away. Stay with us here on Dateline Philippines. We'll be joined by Attorney Barry Gutierrez after we return from this break. We are back. We have with us Attorney Barry Gutierrez, spokesperson of Vice President Lenny Robredo. Welcome to the program, Attorney Gutierrez. Thanks for being with us today.
Happy to be here, Carmina.
All right. So the Vice President was in Iloilo recently. She's now currently in Baguio. She's been going to one place after the other, like the other candidates as well. But I want to ask you, how would you describe the current state of your campaign?
Well, it's very upbeat. The main difference, I think, between this particular campaign and every other campaign that I have seen is really the fact that it is volunteer-driven. VP Leni has called it a people's campaign, and that's really what we have seen in every place she has gone to. That's what we've seen in the many, many areas where our volunteers on their own have actually mobilized in order to campaign for VP Leni with their palugaos and their caravans. And so, you know, the mood is very upbeat. It's very energetic. And despite the fact that it's clear that we have a lot of numbers to make up on in the next few months, we are confident that with the support of these very, very energetic, very, very motivated volunteers all over the Philippines, you will be able to do it.
Okay, we're going to talk about that later on. But first, you know, it wasn't always this way, right? The fact that she made up her mind, I think it was 4 days just before she declared her bid for the presidency, that must have been a frantic pace of preparations for the campaign. How would you describe that to us?
Well, definitely. And I think that that's the reason why we have some catching up to do insofar as the survey numbers are concerned. Every other candidate has been preparing for their presidential runs literally for years before 2022. And as you correctly stated, the vice president really only decided to throw her hat in the ring, well, sometime late September, early October, just a few days before she made the official announcement. So unlike the others, we don't really have a well-established, well-funded machinery already in place, whether on social media or on the ground. And that's what we're trying to actually make up for. But the good news, as I mentioned earlier, is that after she announced on October 7, there was such a huge outpouring of support from different sectors, different areas of the country. And that's really what has actually sustained the vice president's campaign since October up to now. We're really placing a lot of work and expectation on the part of our volunteers. And so far, it's worked in terms of share of voice on social media, in terms of activities on the ground. I'd like to think that we have been able to at least keep pace with the other candidates. And even the surveys indicate that the vice president's numbers are some of the fastest growing, moving upwards since her declaration. So all in all, that's a positive thing.
I want to focus on that for a bit before we move on to the next question. After her declaration, she only moved up one percentage point, correct? I think it was from 16, and then after her declaration, it's at 17. And a lot of survey experts have said that post-declaration, you should be able to see a spike in her numbers. How would you explain what happened to her numbers, even post her declaration, Attorney Gutierrez?
Well, it really depends on what surveys you're looking at. Our own internal surveys and other surveys I've seen had her at 6%, 8% prior to the declaration. Now, most of the surveys have her at somewhere in the high teens, low 20s, 18 to 20. So to my mind and to the mind of the analysts we have on our team, that's definitely a positive thing. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, there are surveys which only move her maybe 1 or 2%. But as I said, it really depends on what surveys you are looking at. And right now, all of us are waiting for the latest SWS and Pulse Asia surveys that are expected to come out later this month. But definitely, by and large, if you look at, on balance, all the surveys that have been coming out post-declaration and pre-declaration, there has been a significant movement on the part of her numbers. And clearly right now, she is the challenger. She is in clear second place insofar as all these surveys are concerned.
As you correctly pointed out a while ago, a lot of people did really say that once she made that declaration, it awakened the spirit of volunteerism. But then again, one has to ask you, Attorney Gutierrez, how many pink paroles, how many pink shirts and blouses and dresses can you wear? How many lugawans can you put up every single weekend to be able to make all of those translate into actual votes for your candidate come election day?
Well, it's not just the wearing of the of pink shirts or the putting up of pink paroles. It's really the fact that unlike every other campaign, which has to depend largely on paid campaign workers, part of the official campaign to actually do their ground campaigning, in our case, it's really volunteers who are moving within their own respective communities and within their own respective networks to actually convince people to support Lenny Robredo and Kiko Pangilinan. So outside of what the campaign itself is doing in terms of mobilization, in terms of communications, in terms of organizing, you have all these thousands of volunteers from all over the Philippines on their own, at their own expense, without prompting, doing all these things for the campaign itself. So I think that's no small thing. We have 153 days to go before the elections. And if on every day, every day until then, you have these volunteers talking to people, talking to their neighbors, talking to their co-workers, talking to their friends and relatives, and really trying to convince them to support VP Lenny, I think that's going to have a huge impact insofar as the ultimate outcome of the elections are concerned.
Are you
definitely
just going
it's
to...
going to be slow, but you know, at the end of the day, it's going to have an impact.
Are you just going to leave it up to the volunteers, though? Because pretty soon, they're going to look towards you for some leadership. They can't
Definitely not. What I've been saying pretty clearly here is that that's over and above what the campaign itself is already doing. I'm sure you've already also seen that we're doing the sorties. VP Lenny is going around all over the country over the past few weeks. Everywhere she has gone, she has been met with enthusiasm and energy on the part of supporters and residents of these areas. Outside of what the volunteers are doing, the main campaign is also focused on getting out her message through social media, through traditional media, and of course, on the ground political organizing. But what the other campaigns do not have, which we do, is that over and above, on top of what the campaign is already doing, but on top of what the campaign will continue to do until May 2022, you have this entire formidable force of volunteers which are moving on their own. Mm. And the multiplier effect of that, I think, cannot be underestimated.
Okay, later on I'm going to talk to you about, you know, the challenges, the actual challenges, and not just, you know, finances and all that, but actual belief systems that are deeply ingrained that you're up against. But before we get into that, you know, you've been with the vice president for quite a while now. During this current stint in the office of the vice president, we've seen her work tirelessly, especially during the pandemic, and that's functioning without a budget, largely relying on private sector donations. She's been very busy. But let me ask you, have you seen her, or did you even expect that she can actually give more as what she has been doing since she threw her hat into the ring?
Well, if there's one thing that I have learned about the Vice President, about Lenny Robredo, since I first met her in the 16th Congress in 2013, is that she will always exceed the expectations. You think that you know, you already have the measure of her, that this is that she's hit her limit, but every time that anybody thinks that, even her own staff, she will prove that she has more to give, that she can actually do more. During the pandemic, at the start, when we first started with our initial project at that time was the PPE donation drive, where we were getting money so that we could get PPEs and distribute them to hospitals and clinics and LGUs all over the country. And we thought that, you know, that was already such a huge thing and a huge undertaking to be led by a very, very small office with almost a negligible budget. And, you know, it was a huge challenge. But she didn't stop there. She initiated so many different programs and projects in the course of the last 2 years in terms of pandemic response. And every time there would be doubts, can we really do this? Can we really do this? Does she have more energy to actually put into it? And she's always been up to the challenge. So, you know, it's part of who she is. It's part of her character. Whatever challenge needs to be met, she can actually rise to it and exceed every expectation. And I think that's also what we're seeing now in terms of the campaign.
Can you still be critical of her, though? If there's a misstep, if there's something that you think won't serve her well, can you still say that to her?
Definitely. One of the things that she encourages in her staffers, in her advisors, is that there be a very, very open atmosphere.
Because you can't put her on a pedestal. You can't put her on a pedestal. You cannot just really fall in love with your product.
Definitely, and that actually holds true not just for the campaign, but for previous initiatives undertaken under the OVP. And I think that she demands it and expects it of us to actually be our best as well. In the sense that if there's something that we think can be improved, then we should speak up. If there is something that that we think can needs to be corrected, then that should be brought to her attention, and she encourages that.
So how much involvement does she have in the campaign?
Well, she's always been a hands-on leader. So we have the campaign manager, of course, Senator Bam Aquino, and he's really been on top of a lot of the activities over the last few weeks, ever since October 7. Mm. But, you know, the vice president is also someone who has had a lot of experience, particularly with local elections. Mm. And I think that she has a very, very keen political sense, honed over the many years that she was, the principal supporter and manager of the late Mayor Jesse Robredo's campaigns, as well as her own time both in Congress and in her vice presidential run before. Mm. So she does not hesitate to actually also bring up her own suggestions or her own takes on the different things that we are doing in the course of this campaign.
And speaking of local elections, as we said a while ago, she's currently in Baguio City. I think it was yesterday when she met with Mayor Benjamin Magalong.
Yes.
The mayor sort of stopping short of really publicly declaring support for the vice president. May I ask you what they talked about? Because they had some time together.
I think that what they largely talked about was the way that Mayor Magalong managed Baguio's pandemic response. It's no secret that in previous public statements, the vice president has actually expressed a great degree of appreciation and admiration for the way that Baguio has responded to the pandemic. So a large part of the conversation actually revolved around what Baguio did insofar as the pandemic is concerned, and of course on the part of the VP, what she herself tried to do with the OVP in terms of pandemic response. Because, you know, these are two leaders who have had a lot of hands-on experience battling and trying to manage probably the biggest crisis we have faced as a nation, and you know, insofar as the entire world is concerned. So they had a lot to talk about insofar as their different approaches to this crisis is concerned.
And the fact that the mayor couldn't publicly declare his support for the vice president, how does the campaign take this?
Well, he met with the vice president and he expressed his own admiration for her. So, you know, at this point, 153 days before the election itself, I think that that's a pretty good outcome. Obviously, a lot of the local officials that we will be meeting will still not be willing to give an outright endorsement. But, you know, there's time for us. And a simple public declaration of admiration and approval at this stage is already very, very helpful because it underscores the fact that the vice president, regardless of whether these public officials are already explicitly supporting her or not, whether they are part of her party or not, do have a lot of respect for her and the work she has done.
I want to talk about the ads that have been coming out lately, Attorney Barry. You know, there was some sort of confusion, and this is coming from those who were critical of that. At first, you know, prior to her declaration, there was sort of this move to package the vice president as a leader. If I recall correctly, the tagline then was "Let Lenny lead," and that gained a lot of traction, right? And then there was some sort of disconnect, or another part of the campaign, wherein it was presenting the vice president as a mother, as a nurturing mother. And then I think it was last week when the two ideas sort of were just melded into one, because you really don't have to choose between being a mother and a leader, because you can be both. What was the reasoning behind that? Was that a conscious path for the campaign to take in order to present the vice president as a potential leader of this nation? Attorney Gutierrez.
Well, first of all, let's unbundle that entire set of concepts. You have to be clear that not all of the of the concepts that are actually being pushed on social media as to how to promote Lenny Robredo actually come from the campaign. For example, Let Lenny Lead is a volunteer effort. That was never part of the campaign. Because remember, that actually took place prior to her declaring for president. So that was volunteers urging her to run and expressing their support for her. So one of the things that I have had to clarify with a lot of volunteers and, you know, well-meaning people who have been reaching out is, why do you have these messages? Why do they seem to be in conflict? Well, that's part and parcel of a very, very dynamic and very, very energetic volunteer campaign. There's a lot of stuff out there. There are a lot of messages. There are a lot of materials, particularly on social media, which are volunteer created.
But there's going to have to be a point wherein you're going to have to be able to harness things.
And right now, that's where the campaign that's what the campaign is trying to do. But at some point, you have to strike a balance between just letting 1,000 flowers bloom, letting people, you know, express what they want to express, and, you know, having to police them, because that's really what we want to avoid. We don't want to be policing all these volunteers on that level. You can't do this, etc., etc. So what we're trying to do now is come up with a more general set of messages, and, you know, people can align with these messages insofar as the materials they're producing, because to a certain extent we have to trust them to know the particular audiences that they are talking to, that they are moving in,
because it can be seen, you know, as a slippery slope, that, as you correctly point out, you don't want to go down there and, you know, start policing them, rain on their parade when there's this, you know, spirited a discussion and movement and actions among all the volunteers. I want to go to what some people now are calling her recent missteps. First of all, the sort of take the money and run quote about vote buying. Took her a day to clarify that. And then her recent statement regarding the NTFL CAC. Some camps consider that as worrisome. How does the campaign see these statements and the effect of that?
I actually don't think these are missteps, but in any campaign, there will be reactions to anything a candidate says. There will always be a particular segment or a particular sector of the electorate, or even your own supporters, who will feel strongly about one particular issue. And if they feel that that issue has not been correctly or properly addressed in certain statements made by the candidate or by the campaign, then they're, obviously they will react. But the thing is, in any campaign, you can't satisfy everyone. that's the point. And what we're trying to do right now is, well, one, yes, there will be efforts to clarify if there is a need to publicly clarify. But there are also efforts, probably not as visible in the public eye, to reach out to these groups and talk with them and make the clarification there.
Okay.
And at the end of the day, I think that's part and parcel of any political campaign.
She did say in a report that we ran before we got to you on air, she was talking about the support now of Manila Mayor Isko Moreno of the candidacy of President Duterte. She said that's his right, but she also said it's his right to choose who he wants to be with, but our choices are not just for the senatorial slate, are a reflection of our aspirations. It always reflects the values that we believe in. Does that mean that you didn't, that she didn't believe in the value of having a Nery Colmenares on your slate?
Well, you know, I think that that's a very, very clear issue already. She did not choose Nery Colmenares, but she chose Attorney Sunny Matula. So in other words, it's not a full story to just look at, well, Nery didn't make it into a slate, therefore that's a reflection of something. But she did not take Nery, but she took a person who has a very, very long track record in fighting for the rights of labor. And she was very, very clear leading up to that decision that the last slot for the senatorial team of Lenny Robredo and Kiko Pangilinan would belong to somebody who had worked with and who represented basic sectors. And we got that in Attorney Sunny Matula. So if anything, that choice, I think, is reflective of her values and her commitment to actually fight for the rights of those in the margins, as she has actually been very consistent in doing so over the last, well, 5.5 years as vice president and 3 years as a congressman, and of course her entire career as a public interest lawyer.
You're talking about missteps a while ago. Of course, you said that you don't consider what she has said in recent past as missteps, but some people are also saying the same thing of another presidential candidate, and that's Manila Mayor Isko Moreno, the recent one of which is what I just said, him supporting the candidacy of President Duterte. But here's the thing. These missteps of Mayor Isko Moreno isn't benefiting your camp. It's going to, the numbers are going to the Marcos's camp. How much of a threat or how much of a concern is this for you?
Well, obviously, first of all, I don't know whether the numbers of Mayor Moreno are in fact all going to Mr. Marcos. So, you know, that's something that I cannot really speak to. But as to whether or not the numbers are a concern in general, well, obviously they are. Elections are about numbers. And if the recent surveys are to be the basis, then clearly you have a front runner who has a fairly significant lead. And we have to make that up. And, you know, I said this at the outset. It's a challenge. It's going to be a difficult climb. But I'm not concerned in the sense that, you know, this is an impossible task. I think there is a clear way forward. Mm. And I think that the level of energy and enthusiasm of the volunteers of supporters that have come out to support VP Lenny, and let me reiterate this, in my experience, this is unprecedented. I have never seen this level of investment on the part of supporters and volunteers for any candidate in recent elections. Mm-hmm. I think that that's going to be a huge factor in allowing Lenny Robredo to actually make up the difference in numbers that we have right now. So steady lang, tuloy-tuloy lang hanggang sa darating na mga buwan. But, you know, I think that this is something that is definitely doable.
Here's the thing, though, as a final question, Attorney Barry, every single candidate has been promising one thing: change in the way the government has reacted to this pandemic. But the government is also saying the same thing. So as we talk about the path to the presidency, how is your campaign going to be different and distinct from what all the others are saying, from what government itself is saying?
Well, I think the main difference is anybody can make a promise, but who can you trust to actually fulfill that promise? That obviously the person who has already done these things. Obviously the person who already has a clear track record of being able to achieve so much with so little. Obviously the person has been very consistent in what she has been saying over the course of the last 5.5 years insofar as what direction we should be taking as a nation and, you know, as leaders of this particular nation. And I think that's where the rubber meets the the road. The VP Leni is really a person who has embedded herself and has worked at the level of the grassroots her entire career, not just in her career as a politician, but in her career as a public interest lawyer before that. That has been the trademark of her working style, the trademark of her leadership. And I think that no other candidate can actually claim that. So while we may say some of the same things, at the end of the day, it boils down to who you can trust to deliver. And I think that the VP's track record is the clearest indication that she will be able to do what she is in fact saying right now.
Attorney Barry Gutierrez, spokesperson for Vice President Leni Robredo, appreciate you coming to the show. Thanks for joining us today. You take care and keep safe.
Take care, Armina. Always happy to be here.
Thanks a lot. All right, next week on In Focus, we speak to health advocate and online celebrity Dr. Willie Ong, who is gunning for the second highest post in next year's elections. Catch my one-on-one interview with Aksyon Demokratiko's vice presidential bet on December 14 here on Dateline Philippines. Have questions? Send them in to ANC Alerts on Twitter and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Just don't forget to use the hashtag ANCInFocus. That'll do it for today. Thank you for joining us. I'm Carmina Constantino. If you want to revisit today's episode, Dateline Philippines podcast is on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Playback this newscast too on ANC's YouTube channel and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe. Keep it here on the News Channel.